Hey, it's Lawrence with a quick introduction to this, our third episode. This was also recorded in 2016, which explains why our cultural references are so out of date, why we don't seem to know anything about current events, and why we have hope and optimism for the future. It was also marred by horrible technical difficulties. We've done our best to correct these, but they are far outside of our skills to really counteract much. They do get much, much better about 15 minutes into the main track, probably about 16 minutes into the overall podcast. Please bear with us. I am also releasing a bonus episode to sort of help counteract that. So enjoy this double dose of Bad Time Radio. My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio. So this is our third episode. We're covering Something in the Waters, which is an episode of a BBC very limited series called All the Dark Corners. As near as I can cipher out, although I'm not sure about this, it first aired in 2011. And we're trying something a little bit different. The last couple of episodes, we've said, hey, check this out if it hasn't, except we've spoiled it for you, so maybe don't. So this time, we're going to suggest, we're going to give you a very brief recommendation about whether we think you should check it out or not, and then we will dive into it more fully and sort of justify our explanation. So here we go. But first. So I think you should check this out. It's pretty well made, and the ending is pretty weird, and it's not like as funny as the other ones, but it's pretty weird, so give it a listen. I say you can get it on the BBC website occasionally, or you know, if you're good with torrents, this is pretty torrentable. Also, it's not currently on the BBC website, but it'll pop up from time to time. Ronald, what do you reckon?
Okay, yeah, I think this one was worth listening to. I definitely liked it a lot more than the past two that we've listened to. There's a lot more that happens. I would say that there is kind of a funky twist, but it's somewhat foreshadowed compared to the other two episodes that we watched. So I definitely think that it's a lot more interesting because of that rather than just straight out of left field. So
yeah, it is a pretty weird twist, but I've listening to it again, it does play fair with it. I don't think you could guess the specific twist, but when you know what clues to look for, they are all there.
Yeah. I also think it's not just, you know, Gorilla Pilot.
Yeah, exactly. That's the least motivated twist there is. or Eddie is the Devil.
Yeah, or Eddie is the Devil. Yeah. Just with no foreshadowing or clues or anything.
Yeah, except one clue that isn't a clue and also isn't actually in the episode.
Yeah.
Anyways, so as is Bad Time Radio tradition, we are now going to roll to see who summarizes the episode. I will be 1, 2, 3. Ronald will be 4, 5, 6. And this time I'm going to try to remember to tell you guys what the dice roll was. So I think that's going to really help your immersion. So it's me.
All right. It's a 2.
Yeah. It's a 2. So we open, and Ronald, you may have to help me out a little bit with this one. Because it does this weird thing where the sort of story...
I definitely was lost for the first little bit. Yeah. I think I understand what happened.
Yeah, so we open on a guy. I think his name is I took some notes. His name is James. However, as I'm going to, he's definitely Richard Dawkins, right?
Pretty much. Yeah he's on the character.
He's a British, like, very strident atheist who everyone was like, "Hey, you're great." He apparently had a newspaper column. But then he said, "Hey, you know what I don't like? Muslims. Those guys, God is bullshit too." And suddenly everyone who had been cheering him on when he was like, "The Church of England is some bullshit," said, "Hey, it's really weird for a white guy to go around and tell a bunch of brown people that their God isn't real. That's like different from a white person telling white people that their God isn't real." I kind of agree with that for complicated, like, post-colonialist reasons. It is a bit weird for a white guy to just go up to a follower of Islam, a Muslim. Damn it! It took me too long to say that. And say, "Hey, by the way, God's not real, idiot." So, but
I mean, it is pretty abrasive to do that for any religion. Even though, you know, if anyone who knows me personally knows that I'm pretty nihilist, not really follow any religion, and think it's all like wrong, but not necessarily, but
you don't have to be a dick about it. But yeah, this guy, exactly. Who I'm just going to call Richard Dawkins because that's who he is, other guiding ethos and the other thing that makes it pretty obvious that he's supposed to be Richard Dawkins is that he will always find a way to be a dick. No matter the situation, he will be a dick. It's sort of astonishing.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, he's just super confrontational about it, too. He doesn't pull punches. People who are just trying to make conversation with, he'll get hostile around.
At one point, he's like in a pub, and he's talking about how he's going to help the town bring in more business, and he chooses to phrase that as, I'll bring a better class of people in here. It's like, I think that there are more ways of saying I will help bring business to your pub that aren't offensive by like two orders of magnitude. Yeah. And he still is like, no.
He finds the nugget in that dust. So
there's like four ways of doing it, and three of them involve swearing. He found the one you could say on the radio.
Yep.
So anyways, he and his wife and their child, and apparently a dog, although the dog's kind of an afterthought. It exists mainly to get killed later. Are driving to, it seems like a Scottish village, although then he's talking about commuting to London, which I don't think you could really do from Scotland unless you were willing to ride a plane or ride on the train for like a really long time every day. But
it's possible that he's talking about commuting, once a week or something.
Yeah, I don't know. So they're riding to this town. The reason they're going to move into a house there, it's a small Scottish village on the edge of a lake.
I mean, is it not the Loch Ness village?
It's supposed to be Loch Ness-esque because they're not allowed to say what they did about the Loch Ness monster. Can you libel something that doesn't exist? If so, they would have with the Loch Ness monster in this episode.
I mean, fair enough, but they call him Lockie. They
call him Lackey.
So, I thought they were saying Lockie, like Loch Ness.
I think it's Lackey. I don't know.
Okay.
If it's Loch Ness, they never say it's Loch Ness. Okay. And also, the Loch Ness monster is called Nessie.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
So they want to do Richard Dawkins meets the Loch Ness monster, but they don't call him Richard Dawkins if they don't call it Loch Ness.
Discount Richard Dawkins meets the not Loch Ness monster.
Yeah, the Loch Ness manster or something. Anyways, so they're having to sort of flee London exactly, but leave London because he wrote a bunch of columns saying that Islam is bullshit, and that was enough to get them kicked out or sort of exiled from polite circles and for him to lose his newspaper column. The wife is apparently a successful author, so there's going to use the money she's still making to go and live in Scotland for a while until the, hubbub, dies down. The other thing that happens almost immediately is that we start hearing these weird sort of highly distorted audio of kids like laughing and teasing another kid. It turns out eventually that this is from Richard Dawkins' childhood when, because his father was a vicar, some kids were being total assholes to him and like making him stay in a lake and he almost drowned.
Yeah, and I don't really get that, but why, what it had to do with his father being a vicar.
I guess those kids were strident anti-clericalists and thought that the state-founded religion was bullshit.
I mean, I guess. That seems kind of weird for kids, but...
They're like, no tax dollars for superstition. We're going to drown your son.
And I guess that was a pretty formal event for this guy.
Yeah.
Because he decided to try to drown
him. He's like, they were right. I should have been able to swim.
I didn't like drowning, but those kids had a point about religion.
Or something. The kids are not well developed, although since we only hear them in nightmarish flashbacks, I guess that's sort of fair. We don't really need their backgrounds. So they arrive at the Scottish village and they notice almost immediately that there's a sign with a picture of a plesiosaur on it. And apparently Richard Dawkins hadn't done much research because it turns out they moved into, as Ronald calls it, not Loch Ness. So let's call it Fox Ness. No, that's no good. I don't know.
Lackness.
Yeah.
Because they call it Lackey, apparently.
Yeah, Lackness checks out. And also because, Lackness, they're lacking.
Yeah.
But, that's not great. Sense. So they move into the house. He establishes his dick atheist credentials by picking out which book he should have out for when the vicar comes by to fuck with the vicar. His wife's a little bit playing along with it. So this is the only time in the episode when it's suggested they might like each other.
Yeah. And at past this point, well, maybe the end. But
he's sad when she dies. So they move into the house. And that, or the next scene, they go to a bar. The owner of the bar is apparently also the head of the Chamber of Commerce, which the episode.
I mean, that makes sense why you have a Chamber of Commerce for a village that is small, right?
Well, they're dependent on tourism, I guess.
I guess.
They mentioned they have a tourism office. That's something you gotta
imagine. It seems like he knows everyone in the town, which makes me think pretty small town.
Yeah. The episode will gradually try to make you very afraid of the Chamber of Commerce, but because it's called the Chamber of Commerce, it will not work.
Yeah, no, they do not seem like a very scary bunch.
Yeah.
I mean,
at the end, yeah. But again, there's still the Chamber of Commerce. So you think old, like, white guys getting a bit too drunk.
Yeah, I feel like I could take them.
Yeah. Although, apparently, they are pretty crafty, Ronald.
That's true. I mean, they did, like, pretty much poison a guy when he's down.
Well, we'll talk about that, but yeah. Although, that guy was really dumb. That's the other thing about Richard Dawkins in this. He is dumb as a rock.
That's true, yeah. I think this is really trying to, as you pointed out during the episode, this episode is really trying to thrust down our throat about faith versus the scientific method, which is just, I don't really get what their point is.
Well, I guess that the scientific method, if you're a dick, it won't work good for you.
Yeah, because, I mean, here's the thing about the method. Is it, like, at first it seems like it's saying, like, hey, faith defies all scientific expectation, but then at the end he kind of does solve it.
Yeah, but, I mean, it doesn't matter because he refuses to not be a dick, even if it might save his life. He will always be a dick.
I guess that's it. I mean, yeah, well, we'll talk about that at the end.
Yeah, so they, he goes, I think at this point we should sort of break it up into, like, threads a little bit.
Okay.
So the first thread is that he's trying to teach his son to swim.
Yeah.
So he encounters a cop, a police constable named Ruskin while he's teaching his kid to swim. And Ruskin says, hey, the lake is very dangerous. Don't let your kid swim in it. Yeah. And then immediately afterwards, the kid somehow disturbs a pig corpse from the bottom of the lake, which floats up and says, like, hey, kid.
I wish you had said that.
And the corpse, it has its eyes removed, and it's got all of its soft tissue, but since it's at the bottom of the, or gone, which, since it's at the bottom of the lake, isn't that unreasonable. And then Ruskin mentions that his wife, like, died in the lake a few years back.
Yeah, so it kind of adds this kind of, like, scary tone to the lake, which you're thinking, maybe there is some kind of, you know, Loch Ness Monster or something. It seems like there is some precedent, and apparently everyone in the town believes that they've seen this thing.
Except for Ruskin. Ruskin is dismissive to Dawkins. He's like, no, there's no monster in the lake, but it is still pretty dangerous, so don't go swimming in it.
Yeah. Which, yeah.
Ruskin's a very interesting character. We should talk about him at the end.
I agree, because he's the most interesting character, probably, besides the main character.
Well, the main character isn't interesting once you're just like, oh no, he's always going to be a dick.
Yeah, but he does have a little bit of an arc.
He realizes at the end that there might be a price for his dickishness and decides to pay it.
I guess he does, yeah. But anyways, yeah, so Ruskin, he pretty much says, like, oh, don't go swimming in the lake. You might die for some reason, even though a lake really shouldn't have, like, underwater or anything like that.
But apparently that you can, like, they mentioned that all large lakes have a few people who drown every year because they're not strong swimmers, or they get, like, caught up in pond reeds.
I think most of those are, like, alcohol-related deaths, but, you know.
Yeah, that's
maybe
true.
There's just some, I'm sure there's some where people just, like, hit their head or whatever.
So, anyways, the next piece in this thread is they go swimming. Or he's continuously trying to teach his kid to swim, and his kid's like, why don't you get in the water with me? And Richard Dawkins insists, I know how to swim. I don't need to get in the water with you. And then when they're hanging out together, the kid has grown increasingly insistent that he's seen the monster. He's keeps telling his dad, I've seen the monster. And his dad keeps saying, like, shut up, kid. You're telling me lies. Well, he never says he's lying. It's unclear what he actually thinks is going on, which is very weird because as a scientist, he should be looking for an explanation, right?
Right. Yeah, that is kind of one theme about this, that, like, Dawkins is supposed to be a scientific mind, and he talks about ration all the time, except that he just kind of jumps to whatever, like, is the easy, or not even necessarily the easiest explanation, but he just jumps to whatever he believes in the moment, and he's, like, like head first in it. So as soon as he sees any evidence of the Loch Ness Monster, he's just like, just despite lack of evidence, he's like, no, I'm a firm believer. No matter what you say, it doesn't matter.
And this is actually something I kind of liked about him. It's a slightly subtle character note in that they never actually explicitly have anyone say, like, you know, or point it out. But he refuses to believe anything he hears from someone else. But the second he sees it himself, he goes full on board. He never doubts himself for a second, and he always doubts other people. And, you know, it's old-time radio, so it's a little bit nice to see a slightly subtle, not someone pointing out, oh, you're so arrogant.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think that's definitely true. It does seem like he doesn't trust anything about anyone else. That is actually a pretty big part of his character. And I think that might have to do with, you know, his father being somebody who he obviously has worked against his whole life.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody that told you what to believe when you're growing up and then suddenly you're clearly going against that, that sounds like it's pretty indicative of somebody who's just against authority.
They never hit that too hard. They're never like, you're an atheist because your dad. You know, he has dad issues clearly, but he seems to actually kind of fond of his dad. So it's not just like, I don't believe in God because I don't believe in my dad and my God's like a dad in the sky.
Yeah, that's true. They don't do that. So.
Yeah. Again, if this were the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, that would have happened 5 times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, listeners, I'm going to level with you a little bit. We've been having some weird audio troubles. You probably already picked up on that. I'm starting to think we might just release this as like a bonus episode or something. We're down a man and the audio sucks, but we soldier on.
Yeah, we're going to finish it up because it was an interesting episode and we just want to talk about it. So
yeah. So anyways, so he gets convinced that there's a monster in the lake now because he saw it. And he immediately decides that it's a plesiosaur because the people in the village said that it was probably a plesiosaur, and he had previously pointed out that it's basically impossible for a plesiosaur to have survived in the lake.
Okay, this part I don't really understand what happened here.
He saw
something large rise out of the lake, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, with the twist, I don't understand how that happened.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a bit. But I kind of understand what's going on there. Well, let's double back to some other weird plot threads. The other thing, I figure we also got the allergies and then the plumbing problems. And then these are all going to kind of come together. So he and his wife and kid are getting covered in weird sores. And they think they're midge bites. As near as I can cipher out, a midge is a gnat.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking, like lice or...
mosquito, something that flies. So they go... and it keeps getting worse and worse. So they decide to go to the doctor. And the doctor gives them some antihistamines. But also suggests that allergies are caused by social problems.
Yeah. So basically she suggests that if he's not such a dick, maybe they won't get allergies anymore.
Oh. And in this horrifying twist... she tells them to join the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, that's going to solve their rash issues, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, this doctor seems sketch as hell. I'm pretty sure if I went to a doctor that was like, hey, maybe since you have this rash, maybe you should join the Chamber of Commerce and that'll help.
Or indeed,
I'd be like, what the hell, man? Did you get a medical degree?
If they're like any organization other than maybe some kind of like anti-allergy support group.
Yeah. I could see saying a rash could be caused by stress, but I don't see how you could think a stress-related rash would be helped by joining a committee.
To bring more business to a town.
Yeah.
I was surprised she didn't just say, I think this rash is caused by the stress of dealing with your husband, who, in the 5 minutes I've known him, has insulted the college I've gone to, said my children are ugly, and told me repeatedly that my God isn't real.
Yeah, I mean, like, I could understand that reasoning, but...
yeah, her husband, Richard Dawkins, is the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, in real life, he's pretty bad, too. He's not quite this bad, but...
I mean, in real life, Richard Dawkins is at least not... totally dumb, like the character
is. Yeah, he's not totally dumb.
I think
he
has some tact.
He's not totally dumb, and although he's a weird rape apologist, well, not rape apologist exactly, he says things that feminists dislike about rape, but, you know, he wrote some good books at one point, and he knows his way around a sentence when he's
just saying, like, hey, enjoy your life. When he actually gets into any religious polemic, he's pretty annoying.
Well, I also feel like Richard Dawkins understands who what he's doing to the point of he's pretty popular, whereas this fake Richard Dawkins guy...
Richard Notkins.
Yeah, Richard Notkins definitely is, like, so abrasive to the point where he's lost all of his credibility and no one will even call him back with his ideas, so...
Yeah, another thing to consider on this, Richard Dawkins, or this guy, Richard Notkins, he explains at great length why it's impossible for there to be a plesiosaur in the lake. He's, when the villagers are first like, there's a plesiosaur in the lake, he's like, well, it would have had to survive for 3 million years, or I think it's 300 million years, something like that.
A lot.
Yeah, it was a very long time. How would it have even gotten in the lake? If it's like Loch Ness, it's a glacier-formed lake. So, no, wait, that's not true of Loch Ness, I don't think. But point is, it would be hard for it. There'd have to be a breeding population, which means there'd have to be, they'd eat, like, all of the fish and starve to death long ago.
Yeah, so basically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But as soon as he sees it, or sees an outline of something, he's like, oh, yep, it's real.
Yeah.
No doubt.
As opposed to, the real Richard Dawkins would at least think, well, maybe it was something other than a plesiosaur for a second.
Right. Yeah, or at least be open to the idea that maybe it wasn't a plesiosaur, but something is in there.
Yeah. Okay, so they're really allergied up. The other weird thing that they notice is that nobody in the village has these allergies, and in fact, they comment repeatedly on how everyone in the village looks super healthy, which apparently means that they aren't fat. And at one point, the wife suggested they look like they could beat Richard Dawkins up pretty hard. So, yes. You know, I'm kind of on their side a little bit.
Yeah, I usually side with the stronger.
And also just, I kind of want to see this guy and possibly real Richard Dawkins get punched. I read The God Delusion, okay? I have earned my antipathy towards him.
Fair enough. I'm not super familiar with his works. I mean, I've seen him talk, but... I haven't read his stuff.
He's a great evolutionary biologist whose idea of memes will live forever, but he's seemingly dedicated the last, like, 15 years or so towards being a big enough douche that people will forget, oh yeah, you thought of the concept of memes.
Yeah. So, okay, so anyways, they're doing some work on their house, right?
Yeah, they comment that there's a lot of dry rot.
Yeah.
And then they start hearing weird noises in the pipes. And so they get in a plumber, and the plumber refuses to tell them what he did to fix it, but he does it in kind of a jokey way, to which Richard Dawkins immediately is a total dick to him.
Yeah, as he is throughout the show.
Yeah, and then they discover that they go check the tank that the guy was working on, and they discover that he put a silver cross in there, and that appears to have been the entirety of the work he did. And Richard Dawkins flips out and throws the cross away, which, okay, even if you hate crosses, a solid silver cross is worth something, dude.
It's gotta be worth a decent amount.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking like $50 or whatever. Yeah. Pawn that shit at least, dude.
Yeah, I mean, or at least give it back to the plumber.
And that would give you a chance to be a dick to him, Richard Dawkins. Yeah. You know you want to do that. The guy brought a cross into your house. It is a remarkable display of restraint on, like, the show's behalf that he doesn't recoil from the cross like a vampire.
You know, at first I thought there was going to be some part of it where the cross was causing him the rash, and turned out that, like, religion had abandoned him so fully that he was literally allergic to crosses or something. I'm pretty thankful that's not ended up what happening.
Yeah. So then they're hearing a lot of weird noises in the pipes after Richard Dawkins or Notkins or whatever we're calling him has removed all of the crosses he could find in the pipes. And the wife goes down to investigate because the kid is like, oh, there's so many weird noises. And we hear these noises. They would genuinely be really disturbing to hear in the wall of your house. It's some pretty excellent sound effect work.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, throughout it's like, when they're talking about the noises in the walls, it's like, well, you can hear them, right? Like, those are freaky. Like, I feel like if I heard those in my walls, I'd be like, what the hell is going on? I would just ignore it.
I would leave the house because I would be legit convinced that there was someone in the walls.
Yeah?
Or that the house was going to collapse.
Or something was gone wrong. I mean, I don't know what it'd be, but yeah, something's clearly not right. You shouldn't be making noises like that. So.
Yeah. So, she goes down to the kitchen, and she sees something in the sink, and she reaches out to it, and It's unclear exactly what she sees, but I think it's sort of like a tentacle or something. Not quite, but something like that. She reaches out to touch it. She says it's like a fungus at this point. Yeah. They're not playing it coy with that, which again is this episode playing fair, as we'll find out.
Uh-huh.
It hides the twist in plain sight and also behind the fact that you wouldn't think of it.
Yeah, right, because it's pretty weird, but
yeah,
it doesn't just completely try to obscure by doing dumb things that make no sense, but it's actually pretty cool.
So she touches it and it stings her, and then she goes to her husband and she's like screaming in pain, and her husband is like, well, what, it can't have hurt that bad, it's just a piece of, he decides it's fiberglass based on almost nothing. When we find out what it is, it would not resemble fiberglass.
No, it wouldn't at all, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be way thicker probably, and fiberglass isn't very long.
Yeah, definitely not. Fiberglass does not look like seaweed or fungus or whatever. Yeah. So he grabs what he thinks is fiberglass. He gets a good look at it too, which makes it all the more incomprehensible to me.
Well, and this guy's not probably a real scientist, so.
Yeah.
from everything that we see about him, he's very skeptical about anyone else's stuff, but he doesn't employ the scientific method in any way.
Did they ever actually mention what kind of scientist he's supposed to be?
I don't think so, but I was kind of confused at the beginning, so I might have missed some of those details.
I kind of just figured biologist because, again, he's very clearly Richard Dawkins.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. He might just be completely modeled after Dawkins, so.
Yeah. So this prompts them to go to that doctor who tells them to join the Chamber of Commerce to cure their allergies. So now we've sort of tied all of those together a bit. So everyone else in the town looks healthy, but they're having horrible rashes. Richard Dawkins now believes in the Loch Ness Monster, and they've established, well, Lackey, and he thinks it's a plesiosaur. So he goes down to the pub and he's like, hey, let's, I believe you guys now. It's totally a plesiosaur. I'm going to bring down film crews. And he starts trying to shop this to film crews and documentarians and so on, but none of them are having any of it. Most people are convinced it's a hoax, which that's a really weird hoax, but whatever.
And another thing is that I don't remember exactly in the timeline when this happens, but the kid also mentions that he's heard that crosses keep the Lackey away, which is the monster that they think is in the lake.
At which point, to which Richard Dawkins replies, I'm going to try to take you out of the local school because they teach you this nonsense. Yeah. Also, at one point, he's mentioning that the library doesn't have a general science section, but has a whole section on monsters, which may sound like a really cool library to me, but he takes that as like, oh, it's for the ignorant masses, to which his wife, who's a popular author, says, oh, you mean my fans? And he's like, I didn't say that.
I didn't explicitly say that.
But they probably have your books in there, yeah, because it's a garbage library for garbage people. He is the worst.
Yeah. I mean, how many people go to the library nowadays? I mean, this was only filmed like 5 years ago. How many people go to the libraries and like check out science books?
Unless it's the campus library, I can't imagine it's very high. You go to the library because you want something fun or maybe for a school report, but...
Yeah, honestly, if you're doing research, you either want articles or you can use the internet.
Yeah.
Textbooks are not that useful for research.
I think you should just be pleased that they've got a library at all in this small Scottish town.
Right.
But so
anyways, that just shows another... thing of him being up in his ivory tower, which kind of confuses me because he's clearly not a real scientist, so...
Well, if he is, he's a shit one.
Yeah.
Turns out that he's so arrogant because he faked his degree, and he's desperately trying to stop people from calling him on it.
I could see that. No, like, that from his character, that would make total sense.
That might explain why he said the plesiosaurs were around... It would have had to survive for 300 million years. That could be a geography of Scotland thing, I guess. But on the other hand, I think plesiosaurs were around more recently than that. The dinosaurs only went extinct 75 million years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember what he said, but he might have said 300 million.
Yeah.
So he could have been wrong, or it could have been bad writing error.
Or it could have just been that he faked his degree.
Yeah, or maybe we just misremembered.
I like the idea of him as a science shyster.
Yeah, that fits. That fits really well.
He's utterly convinced, and he's shopping to documentary crews, but they're not having any of it. One woman thinks it's a phony. Another, like, trashy one calls up, and he's like, well, we'll film it, and it'll be about how you hate Muslims and are convinced monsters are real. Will you like that? And he Dawkins hangs up on him.
Well, I mean, honestly, they're just trying to sell what he's what he's pitching. So.
I mean, if you've got a real lake monster, all you got to do is get the film crew up there. It doesn't matter if it's serious or not. The second you've got footage of an actual monster, you have control of over the documentary.
I mean, I think it also shows his kind of like the kind of mental issue he's having with this whole episode, which is he doesn't believe anything anyone else says, but as soon as he sees it, he expects everyone to believe what he says.
Okay, what do we think he saw that convinced him Muslims were evil then?
I have no idea. I think that he probably always thought that. He just never had, you know, taken the time to, because Muslims probably didn't affect him that much until... Yeah. You know, more recently.
Or he just had a thing where someone, like, bumped into him on the street, and he thought that the fellow looked a bit, you know, dusky, so he decided to launch a crusade. That's also possible.
I could definitely see this guy being just a total racist, so...
Yeah. So
based on his actions.
Yeah. So he goes in and he gets a bunch of scientific equipment, and he starts, like, setting up essentially traps for this lake monster. So he puts a bunch of fish on the shore, and then he starts monitoring sonar equipment. And at this time, his kid is like, I'm going to go swimming in the lake. And at the very least, he thinks there's a plesiosaur in it, but he's so busy like watching his sonar equipment that he doesn't do anything about the kid.
I don't really understand this kid either, because he's clearly terrified of the monster and generally doesn't want to be anywhere near it, but every once in a while he's like, I'm just going to go swimming, even though I don't know how to swim, near where I think this monster exists, you know? It's like, dude.
Yeah, the kid is one of the worst developed parts of this. He doesn't matter all that much, but except for the crazy part of the ending.
Right.
So he's watching the sonar equipment, and the monster's coming, and he yanks his kid out of the water, which is it the only good thing he does in the entire...
It's possible. I guess sticking to his guns, you could argue, is good.
And when his kid and wife goes missing, he is honestly trying to get people to go look for them.
Yeah.
So, he's watching the sonar equipment, and the thing's coming closer and closer and closer, and then suddenly it, like, goes right past where the sonar is, and it's clear that it went inside the house somehow.
Yeah, and so at this point it's a little confusing, because, you know... He's pretty convinced that it's some kind of monster, like dinosaur, and it clearly like goes into his house, and then he runs into the house and he hears stuff on the pipes.
Yeah, the pipes are absolutely crazy. I think that they look into... No, wait, that's later. They don't see it coming out of the pipes again yet, this time.
Yeah.
Or do they?
I think this is like the end scene.
No, this is...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, so they're looking around, and the wife's like, how could it possibly be in here? I thought it was a big dinosaur. And he says something which is totally, you know, like a total lack of understanding of how sonar works, which is he thinks that its cry gets echoed inside the pipes.
Yeah, he thinks that it's got sonar and that its sonar is fucking with his sonar in such a way that it looks like it's in his house.
Right. And somehow it's getting like reverberated and kind of boosted around in the pipes. Which doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I guess whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't pretend to be an expert on sonar, but I do think that if you somehow have a house where the pipes connect directly to a lake, which everyone comments is weird. At one point someone says, is that even legal? And I don't think it is.
Yeah. I mean, at least not by American standards.
Yeah. Who knows how they do things in Scotland.
Yeah, right.
But anyways, so I don't think if you shoot sonar into, like, the pipes of a house, it's going to make it, like, rattle that much. I'm not... claiming to be an expert on it, but
I just also
weird.
Can't imagine that a sonar machine would assume that, you know, other frequency sounds would bounce into it and think like, oh hey, that's the giant thing.
It seems like what that would do is make the sonar machine essentially convinced that it was surrounded by stuff, because the wave would hit it everywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that it's like, oh hey, suddenly there's this giant object, you know, going into the house. But that's really just noise that passed by it.
Although, I polled you guys, that my wife was also listening, and I polled you guys about what you thought the monster was. I pointed out that it was apparently repulsed by silver crosses, but that it also looked like a lake monster. And Ronald responded with something I thought was very funny. Ronald?
Well, what did I even say?
You said you thought it might be a were-Loch Ness monster.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, I don't know. It just started getting more and more crazy, and I was like, what the hell gets repelled by crosses?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a lake monster, or a demon lake monster, because, like, the Loch Ness monster, the first time it shows up in fiction, or not in fiction, in whatever semi-historical stuff, it's like an Irish saint rebuking it, and then it I think it gets tamed, actually, but it might just go away. So there is a little bit of precedence for them being demon.
Hmm.
But it's
yeah,
not...
no, that would kind of fit with the rest of the theme of the play, because he's so anti-religious.
Yeah.
And it's a lot about faith versus scientific method. So I did think it would be something more religious, especially with the crosses involved. But it turned out that it was not.
Yeah, it isn't. So he vows... You know, he totally ignores his wife's freaking out, his kid's freaking out. He ignores both of them and leaves the next day for to go visit a sonar expert.
That's right. In London, right?
Yeah, somewhere or other. It's a long way away. He says he'll be back quite late. In the meantime, the mother and the kid are left alone in the house. And the mother is... Oh, the mother finds their dog, who has been missing for several days. And... The kid kept coming up to Richard Dawkins and going, "Hey, my dog is missing." And he's like, "Shut up, kid. It'll come back."
Yeah, he basically says, you know, like, who cares? It'll come back when it's hungry.
He thinks there's a goddamn monster in the lake. It never once occurs to him that the monster might have eaten his kid.
Yeah.
Or not his kid, his dog.
His dog.
It also doesn't seem to occur to him that the monster might eat his kid, because he keeps letting his kid swim in a lake that... Even if you don't believe in the monster, a guy kept saying, it's really dangerous, only swim in the designated areas, just don't.
And it's like, okay, even if you think that, you know, a dinosaur is just an animal and it just follows animal instincts, animals are dangerous, dude. Like, you wouldn't let your kid play with a bear.
Or you wouldn't let your kid, like, we literally don't let people swim in monster or in water with, like, a lot of sharks in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's nuts. Like, just because... You believe in science or whatever, it doesn't mean the world is suddenly completely safe.
Yeah, I mean, I even if I have a complete understanding of, like, a wolf pack and all the social dynamics and stuff, if those things are hungry, there's still a reasonable chance they'll fucking eat me.
It's like, hey, I know there's a wolf pack out there, kid, but, you know, just do an alpha ritual and you'll be fine. Don't bother me about it.
Especially when he's literally setting traps to attract them. So it's the equivalent of, I'm going to slaughter the sheep next to you, and then if wolves come or they don't, I don't care.
Yeah. You can handle it. They're just animals following their instincts, you moron.
Yeah, be rational. He keeps telling people to be rational over and over and over. It's like, maybe sometimes it's rational to say, I don't know, and I'm going to be cautious, idiot.
So, anyways, he gets his in the end.
Yeah, he sure does. So, they find the wife finds the dog, and it's been totally stripped of its soft tissue. It's only been missing for like 2 days at this point, so it's unreasonable. And its eyes have been
It's not like it was bacteria, at least.
Yeah. So, she goes to the police officer. Police officer goes, this was clearly people. You need to get your kid and go to, you know, someplace safe in London. No, because your husband was so anti-Islamic that he got death threats. You remember when, like, we were worried about... Or when being anti-Islamic got you, like, social sanctions as opposed to being elected to things?
Yeah. Man. I mean, it's hard to think back on times where civil disrest was a positive thing, but
when like people were like decent to each other, and if you were an asshole you got punished.
Well, anyways,
in a way this episode makes me harken back to a simpler time.
Oh yes, back when we could, you know, throw the anti-Muslim people into their own, basically disrupt them from its society.
So. Yeah, when like, whereas now obviously like he would definitely have just gotten, like, more readers. Although he does say that at one point, I got offered another column, but it was in a magazine I don't like, which, because they're too conservative and so on, and they only want me to write anti-Muslim stuff, and I'm not about that entirely. I also want to slag off the Church of England and say that the Catholics are a bunch of pedophiles and all the other stuff the new atheists love to do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, he sticks to his guns.
Yeah.
He sticks to his guns pretty much the entire... show, regardless of how stupid it is. But anyways,
yeah,
kind of tangential to
I'm
the
sorry.
Whole
thing. I'm just like, I don't want people to think I'm slogging off the new atheist, like, you know, just because I'm a, like, super Christian or something. I legit have reasons for not liking them. Anyways, wow. I can't believe I got called out by Ronald on a tangent.
Yeah, I'm the most tangential one here, man. Come on.
Well, no, that's Raul, but...
Well, Raul doesn't really ever talk about the episode.
Yeah, that's fair. He mostly just proposes horrifying steak sauces and so on. So she refuses to leave because she's like, I'm going to be rational. And
I don't know where this comes from either. I guess it's like, hey, you know what? My husband's been a total dick, and I didn't agree with him at all this whole time.
She had actually said that she might not be there when he came back anyways.
Yeah, and also this cop just affirmed basically everything I told him about. But, you know, let's just turn around right now.
Yeah.
It is opposite of my instincts.
Yeah, this is one of the worst character beats in the thing, because she's already thinking of leaving her husband because, again, he's the biggest dick and now he's obsessed with the stupid lake monster.
Yeah.
And then she finds out that there's apparently something that's trying to kill her and has killed her dog. And her response isn't, well, I was going to leave anyways.
Yeah.
It's instead, no, now I'm going to stay. It could be that she's afraid he's going to make, like, just so much fun of her if he finds out she left.
Yeah, but I mean, there's one point. I mean, it'd be, if she was leaving because she thought there was a giant monster that ate her dog, that's different than being like, hey, the cop told me that somebody killed my dog and I should probably leave the house before they attack me or my kid.
Yeah.
You know?
And even if it's like, I mean, your husband believes it a giant monster at this point and being like, well, it apparently ate our dog.
Yeah. Well, the husband's a moron, so.
Yeah. I do dislike him. Anyways, so she vows not to leave and instead decides to go home and take a shower. That's, odd response.
I mean, yeah, that's just clean off all of the worries of the day.
Yeah.
You know,
and
nice shower is very relaxing.
Yes.
Turn up the heat.
And then something comes sticking out of the shower and stings her. It's the same thing, sort of thing that came out of the kitchen sink earlier.
You know what's funny? This scene reminds me of something that would be in, like, one of those, like, really crappy sci-fi movies, because I could just imagine the really bad CGI of, like, something coming out of the shower and stinging.
It could also just be in any horror movie where they're like, we got a tentacle monster and we want some tits.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah, I could see that.
So she starts screaming because it stinged her really bad, and her son comes running up, and he's like, mommy, mommy, you know, how can I help? What's going on? And she, at this point, has had it and vows to leave. But when she packs her stuff and she's running out of the house, and then she starts screaming and it's unclear what happens. And this is actually the episode, like, wants it to be unclear what happens.
Yeah.
So the next scene we see, the husband has gotten back and his wife and kid are gone, and the police officer is there, and the police, it cuts in a little bit late after he got back, actually, because he's found out that they're missing and is distraught. The police officer says that the only thing that they could find of the wife was a wedding band on the dock, and that he just needs to go back to London. They've got the investigation handled. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm not going back to London. These people hate the fuck out of London for some reason.
Yeah.
And he starts...
Well, Scotland. So yeah. Makes sense.
He starts screaming about, like, we got to drain the lake. We got to drain the lake. My son could be out there. He was wearing a silver cross, and that repels the monster, because apparently he's come around on that one. Well, I guess that makes sense now.
Yeah. Well, I also am like, okay, he says we've got to drain the lake for science. And it's like, how do you propose to go about draining a lake? Like, it seems to be pretty
big.
Get
a bunch of buckets, Ronald, and you just keep at it. Science is 90% perspiration, 10% inspiration. And that it's perspiration is sometimes emptying, like, if it's anything Loch Ness, it's like 10 miles long lake.
I feel like this guy's idea of the lake is that you swim down to the bottom and you pull out the little plug like a bathtub, and it just drains down into the Earth's core.
So first he wants them to dredge the lake. Then he wants them to go search for his son, either in the lake or in the surrounding woods. Then suddenly he somewhat magically intuits what the monster is. And Ronald, do you want to take this one or should I?
You go ahead.
Okay, so it turns out that the monster is an enormous sort of fungus.
It's the fungus among us.
Yeah, that lives in the lake. All of the locals are used to hanging out with it, and, like, drinking water it's in helps them metabolize food better, which is why they're so healthy. Although I think actually metabolizing food better would make you fat.
Yeah, it would make it easier to digest things.
Yeah, so
it doesn't really make a lot of
sense. Yeah, I think you'd get fat, but whatever. The thing he saw was actually a fungal bloom. No, a fruiting body is what they're called, which is a thing that funguses do, where they, like, grow, like, essentially a sort of clump full of spores, and then it bursts, and that's how they spread. Okay. And I guess the thing's mobile enough that it can lift it out of the lake, and that's why people see Lackey all the time.
What I don't get, okay.
And I guess it also can drag people in.
Yeah. I get that, but how does it have a tentacle that can go out and sting people?
Well, I think that that's just more fungus, and it's like kind of mobile, and it gets up into the pipes. Yeah. It kind of makes sense to me that, like,
I could see it getting on someone, but it being
smart enough to get into the pipes.
Yeah, sentient enough to, like, not only get into the pipes, but stick out and sting a person, because it knows that a person is there, even though it has no really sensory input.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't...
I can kind of... I get that.
It seemed to imply that the fungus body was had some kind of intelligence.
Yeah, although it could be, I guess, that it's just so massive that, like... Yeah. You know, whenever it senses something in the lake, it goes after it. Other than that, that wouldn't explain why people can never swim in the lake. That's a bit of a hole. I'll give you that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's a huge deal, but that's why I didn't really understand. I guess I could kind of get the fruiting body, and it just, because he just saw it for a second.
Uh-huh. And I mean, if a clump of fungus on a stem would kind of look like a plesiosaur.
Yeah. So I can kind of get that, but... It being able to, like, have tentacles that can sting people, because it doesn't seem like it was just stinging around anywhere that it touched. I mean, it seemed like it intentionally stung the woman twice.
At the end, it was just coming out of everything in the house. I guess it would make more sense if it just always did that, because then it's just, like, surging everywhere it can.
Yeah, because that would make a lot of sense. But anyways, it's not really that important.
It's remarkable how fairly this plays with all of the twists, because they straight up tell you the thing coming out of the sink looks like a fibrous sort of plant or fungus.
Yeah, yet somehow that's still not anything that I would have expected.
Yeah, it's the rare twist where they kind of actually tell you what the twist is and you just don't get it, because you're like, it can't be that.
It can't be just a giant body of moss that lives in the...
Yeah.
Lives in the lake and eats people.
Yeah, everyone's healthy because it's helping them digest stuff. They're getting rashes because they're not used to exposure to it yet. And
the silver is, like, messes with its metabolism.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter if it's in a cross or not, and that's why her wedding band got left. Now, it is kind of an open question how Richard Dawkins managed to interpret all of, or to suddenly realize all of this. That's where
it didn't seem like he was on the trail at all. Until the very end, when he just suddenly got it.
Yeah, I guess this is sort of where him being a biologist would pay off a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's still... The twist itself, I think... I mean, it's got a few holes, but it generally holds up. The fact that he guessed the twist is pretty weird.
Yeah.
So, he keeps... Then, now that he's realized this, he insists that they drain the lake because the monster... And that they have to tell everyone because the lake is very dangerous because the thing apparently eats people. And that they have... So they have to warn everyone and then they have to drain the lake to kill it.
Yeah.
The police constable at this point says, "I knew you couldn't be reasoned with. I told you to leave multiple times. You're selfish. You're constantly trying to push people away because you think that secretly nobody can ever love you, and you're trying to sort of excuse the fact that nobody ever loves you."
Which, this is, like, a really poignant point, but it's also, like, dude, he's also, like, this freaking, like, fungus is killing people. Like, are you seriously just going to ignore that?
Yeah, it killed your wife, and the guy, Dawkins points out that it killed the police officer's wife, and the police officer is like, "Yes, she was careless, she knew the risks, and I realized more than any, but, you know, it's fine, you can't blame it, it was just instinct."
And he says it's for the good of the village.
Well, we haven't gotten to that yet. So then he's like, "Okay, we're going to go talk to the city council." A chamber of commerce, I'm sorry. Yeah. The city council would actually be slightly more menacing.
Yeah.
Because at least, you know, council.
Right. So, and it sounds like there's some authority there, whereas the Chamber of Commerce is just like, what?
Yeah, we're gonna sort of spend money to lobby the city and state government on behalf of our local businesses.
Yeah, so...
And maybe it's they do different things in England.
Maybe effective, but not necessarily menacing.
Yeah, I mean, they are sort of key in helping Republicans maintain power in the U.S., but, you know, that... I would rather they didn't do that. That doesn't mean that they're evil or scary. So they take him to the city council and the Chamber of Commerce. I keep wanting to correct it into something better. And the Chamber of Commerce has a woman who keeps feeding him whiskey and being like, "This will help you with the shock. We'll go look for your wife in a second." And then they say, "Hey, you were right about what Lackey is," which, okay. But you kind of... the upshot is that he guessed what Lackey is, but he had totally misinterpreted what its relationship with the town was, because the town realizes that it's useful to have a lake monster because it boosts commerce, and they're quite fond of the way that it makes them all very healthy through an unexplained mechanism.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like this would be okay if they just were open with everyone who came there.
We've got magic healing water and a cool fungus monster.
I feel like if people would still be interested in that if you just told them the truth of what it was, and then that way you could easily contain it and not let people die because they didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, they apparently feed it meat, and they occasionally feed it a person because to keep the fatality rate of the lake exactly in line with other large lakes.
Oh, I was under the impression that they occasionally fed it a person when somebody went rogue like this guy.
Yeah, that's true, but they say that they keep the fatality rate exactly the same as other large lakes, which either means that they're somehow stopping the monster from eating people, or they're stopping people from dying in the lake in other ways and then feeding them to the monster. It could go either way.
Yeah.
He's like, well, if you guys won't help me, I'm going to go look for my kid myself. And then the police officer's like, your kid's fine, you'll see him in a second, trust me. And he's, you know, and then the head of the city council says, well, so cards on the table, you know what's going on now, will you keep our secret? Will you join us? Forgetting, of course, that Richard Dawkins operates under one principle and one principle only, which is 3, 2, 1, always be a dick.
Always.
Yeah, just always.
Yep.
And of course, the dick thing here is, no, fuck you. I care about science and people need to know the truth. And this whole, like, you having a fake lake monster thing that actually eats people and isn't a fungus is dangerous.
This whole meeting was pretty, like, cloak and dagger. I would be like, yeah, man, definitely. I won't tell you a secret, I swear. And then, you know,
take off afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. When they're not looking. I wouldn't freaking be like, oh, you guys are all going to jail, morons. And you can't stop me in any way.
Because of science.
Yeah.
Even though you outnumber me and I'm a bit drunk from this whiskey.
And also, like, I'm in a town and don't have a vehicle and you guys are all around me right now physically. And none of that even matters.
And also it's mentioned at one point that they're all very physically imposing and he's not.
So none of that even mattered because he was already poisoned pretty much.
Yeah, so then he's like, fuck you guys, I'm going to leave. He stands up and immediately falls over because it turns out they put a sleeping like pill in his whiskey.
Yeah, and they tell him, hey, sorry, we wish this was a full body anesthetic, but it turns out that the moss monster doesn't like to eat that. So, and then you're like, oh, shit, what? And then it does this really weird part where it cuts back to that first part where he was getting drowned by the kids.
And he says, they're like, do you think your dad's going to be proud of you? And he's like, yes, because I was brave. And it's clear at this point that the father in this thing that he's remembering is actually God. Because at one point, the police officer says, you probably secretly wish there was a God. And it's from that, I think, kind of clear that he does. And he's hoping that sort of God will like his gumption. Which God might, but on the other hand, God, not a fan of you just being a huge dick to everyone you meet.
I wouldn't imagine, at least. I never met the guy.
I mean, I feel like I'm not going to claim to have special insight into God, but most of the major religions agree you should be nice to people.
Yeah, no, agreed. And yeah, so he's pretty much a dick. He's probably going to hell, let's be real.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone goes to heaven, but if they're certainly most major religions would agree he's going to hell.
Yeah.
So anyways, they take him out to the lake. He sees his son on the shore, I think, maybe. He's certainly shouting to him, although at this point, you know,
who knows if that's even internal dialogue, because if he's sedated.
Yeah. Then the woman says, I'm going to adopt your son and show him all the love that you wanted to show him, which, mean thing to say to a guy who's just going to die, but apt. I do question how the fuck some random Scottish lady is next in line to raise this kid.
Yeah.
Maybe she's friends with, like, the local magistrate or something.
I mean,
but
I would imagine he has some family or whatever.
Or, I mean, at that point, the state would probably put him in an orphanage or foster home or something. Maybe she's going to get him through the foster system.
Right.
Or it could be that the judge is also in on this fungus monster thing.
Who knows how big this chamber of commerce is.
Yeah, but still pretty weird last thing for him to hear, like, you know, I'm going to raise your son. And then he starts screaming for his son to tell the truth, see the truth, know the truth. And then it cuts out as they throw him into the water and he's getting eaten.
You just hear some screams.
Yeah, he's going to get eaten by a fungus monster. So I know the twist is crazy, but if you listen to it knowing the twist, there are the clues do add up.
Yeah. Which, and honestly, this episode... So actually, do you want to go to recommendations real quick?
Well, let's sum it up, yeah. Or would you recommend this?
Yeah, so I would say that this episode, even if you know the twist, it's still actually pretty cool. Like Lauren said, you can actually look for the stuff that points out what the twist is going to be. But it's also just like interesting to the characters are more interesting than the other ones that we've listened to. There's a lot more action, a lot more going on. Even though the main character is kind of a dick,
the show knows he's a dick, yeah. And it deals with that fact, which is really what you want.
Yeah, definitely.
And it moves like a motherfucker. That's another thing.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot going on, and to the point where I lost track of what was going on a couple of times throughout this episode.
Yeah, so if anything, it moves too fast, which is a welcome change of pace from the last couple we've had.
So that is a recommendation from me.
Yeah, I'm going to recommend this as well. The twist is genuinely crazy, but I think it holds up even if you know it. It's the first time I heard it, it was really, really spooky. I was listening to it alone while working as a janitor, and I got genuinely freaked out when I had to like walk past a water fountain that was making some noises. Shut up. It was late at night. You don't know.
That's true, I don't.
And... Yeah, I like a lot of BBC stuff. It's got really high production values. The writing does an excellent job of expositing without you noticing and defining the characters really quickly. It's just overall excellent.
Yep.
Yeah, so moving on from that, we would have a mailbag segment here. Ronald, do you want to answer a question you think someone might ask us?
Here, how about I ask you a question, Lawrence?
Sure.
What is... your favorite podcast?
Let's see. That's a little bit tricky for me. I'm a big fan of The Adventure Zone, which is Griffin and McElroy Brothers' product where they play D&D together. It's very funny. What about you, Ronald? What podcast do you enjoy?
Well, I mean, I think this podcast was like very much inspired from me, on my side at least, by The Flophouse, which I really love. I also really like... I'd say the Black Tapes podcast is probably my overall favorite.
Yeah, Black Tapes is excellent too, dudes. Check that out.
Yeah. So, want to move on to recommendations?
Yeah. You want to go first?
Sure. In fact, I just kind of plugged something, so I'll just continue on that. Black Tapes podcast. If you guys are into horror kind of audio, I'm not like associated with these guys or anything, but I just listen to the podcast. I think it's really cool. The Black Tapes podcast is basically about a journalist who investigates into the paranormal. It's not real, but so go into it knowing that, because if you go into it thinking it's real, there's going to be some points where you're like, what the hell, this doesn't seem super genuine. But knowing that it's fictional, it's actually really fun, and it's really well written, and the characters are really cool.
Yeah, it's a great podcast, although that you what the hell thing, really, that's very true. They have this whole episode where they answer like reader questions, and it's just them desperately trying to retcon errors they made in the script. Yeah.
So, you know, knowing that it's fiction, it's a great fun ride.
Yeah, it is very good. Don't let my laughing at it a little mean it's not great.
And when I first listened to it, I wasn't sure if it was real or not, but then like if you listen to the first episode, it doesn't feel real. Like a lot of the script feels written. And it gets better as it goes on. Yeah. But it's hard to act in a podcast for sure.
That's actually a theory I have. Okay, so America stopped making old time radio about 1960. Then there was the CBS Radio Mystery Theater in the late 70s, early 80s. But other than that, aside from isolated theater groups here and there, it's basically dead. Britain, on the other hand, never stopped making them, which is why, in general, British radio programs tend to not have that whole, you know, this dialogue doesn't quite sound natural problem, because they've just, the BBC kept putting them out, so they sort of know this isn't going to work on the radio, and they can tell their scripts.
Interesting.
That's a theory. I'm not sure if it's true or not.
That makes sense. I mean, I feel like experience does lend itself to, you know, better quality.
Yeah, because, like, you're listening to American, like, there's a pretty big resurgence in American sort of horror, old-time radio-style podcasts, and you listen to them, and they keep having to reinvent the wheel over and over on how to, like, get the right balance of exposition versus, you know, what a person would actually say into the dialogue. And as for me, let's see, I've got a couple of recommendations real quick. First, this thing that we listened to, Something in the Water, is from a series called All the Dark Corners, and I haven't heard the last, it's of three sorry, three episodes. I haven't heard the last one, which is called The Dying Wish. But the one before this, which is called The Desk, it's pretty gruesome and weird, and you should probably give it a listen. At the very end, they describe a method of execution that I had never heard of, and I couldn't even Google. So keep an eye out for that. That'll be fun for you. And then
that's what you're into.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, if you just want to hear the absolute best of British radio horror, you should check out the entire series run of Fear on 4. It falls off a little bit in the end, but other than that, it's like 30 episodes of just absolute brilliance. It's incredibly nasty, and often, like, there are episodes of it that I've heard once and could never listen to again because they were so upsetting, and I mean, I...
Wow.
Yeah.
Once has a lot thicker skin than me, too, so...
Yeah. But a series highlights are Survival, which is about a spaceship that goes off course and what the crew has to do to survive, and has the nastiest ending I've ever heard. And let me see, what other ones did I really like? His Last Card is good, and I really liked Dark Feathers, which is about a woman trying to write an opera in Wales and things not... Oh, no, Ireland, and things not going well for her. So... just check out the entire run of Fear on 4. I don't think there's a bum episode in the bunch.
Cool.
So that's another episode for us. Signing off, this is Lawrence. Oh, plugs. I always forget the plugs.
Oh, yeah.
So, Ronald?
I'm at Wraith55.
And, yeah, see you guys next time. Bye.
Like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to? Send us a question for the mailbag or a pedantic correction. You can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Life's gonna gather it.